is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, we're back. Hour number two of The Usual Suspect. It's Way Back Wednesday. It's on my list. You could have picked any Bee Gees song for me. I'm a huge Bee Gees song fanatic. I can work out to their songs.
Really? You can work out to this?
No, not this. Oh. I can work out to, like, Night Fever or Staying Alive, stuff like that.
Okay.
You Should Be Dancing is fantastic.
Fantastic?
Fantastic.
Are we calling it
I'm
fantastic?
A fan of the Bee Gees. I don't understand the lyrics sometimes, but I'm a fan of the tune.
All right.
So there.
Whatever the caller was, it Donald? Was that his name?
Yep.
So his point about the dominance of the SEC over the ACC, I was doing some homework at the break, just looking at top teams and, you know, top 15, top 16s or whatever. That's just, it doesn't bear his statement to be correct either. Last year, we'll go top 16. You had Clemson at 1. You had Florida State at 8. You had Virginia Tech at 16. So they had three teams. The ACC had three teams in the top 16. Bama at 2, LSU at 13, and Florida at 14. So the SEC had three teams in the top 16. So I don't think you would say, I wouldn't exactly say that's dominance when at the end of the year both teams had three in the top 16. 2015, the ACC had three teams in the top 15, SEC had two. 2014, it was flipped. SEC had 4, ACC had 2. In 2013, ACC had 3, the SEC had 5, but that was the year that Florida State finished number 1 and won the national title. So, I don't know where you can't. Overall, would I take the SEC over the ACC? Yeah, but I think when you talk about the top of the conferences and who's finishing
anytime,
where.
You and I were talking about it in the break.
They still got talent in that conference.
You get 3 in the top 15.
Yeah.
That's pretty damn good.
Yep.
You know, yeah, I mean, I don't think that every...
One year that didn't happen, and that was 2014.
Well, aside from last year when I was dead on right that the SEC was down, other than that, I think every conference in America could say, hey, you know what? The SEC is a better conference.
It's not the AAC.
They're tougher year in, year out.
But the ACC isn't the AAC, and I think that that's what he was making it sound like, and it just I think that's unfair to the ACC.
And we've also gone back and forth on the fact that we even covered, you know, Summerlin was on par with like a Mike Gundy, but the expectations are far higher at Oklahoma at Texas A&M than they are at Oklahoma State, and with the facilities and the things that you've mentioned, and the expectations of the entire board and everybody that's there that are Aggs, they expect more. I mean, T. Boone Pickens and the rest of the people at Oklahoma State seem pretty pleased with Mike Gundy competing with Oklahoma, being in the top 25, doing what they're doing.
And I'm not a Florida State guy, but I feel like their out-of-conference schedule is always tougher.
Because they'll play, they've always consistently played Florida, played
Miami.
I mean,
Miami. They opened this year with, and A&M
they played
has
Alabama
never,
this year, right?
I mean, I think, you know, the last couple of years, A&M has reached out a little bit more in their first game of the year. But I always feel like Florida State always had a tougher out-of-conference schedule year in and year out than A&M did, or does. But when you look at overall, this will give you, I think this might be a good summary. Jimbo Fisher coached 2 more years at Florida State than Kevin Sumlin did at A&M and lost 1 less game. So in 3 less games. Kevin Sumlin's record at A&M was 51-26. Jimbo Fisher's record at Florida in 2 more years was 83-23. So he lost 3 less games in 2 more years of coaching. That says a lot.
And I think the other thing is, too, is Jimbo Fisher, through his experiences, has figured out exactly what we're talking about with Kevin Sumlin in terms of the translation between the transition of getting the 5-star recruits, getting that to translate on the field.
The 5-star recruits is big.
And get the results that you're looking for as a university. He's got that. He's done that. And he's got titles to prove that.
Yeah.
Someone's still trying to get to that level.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, we appreciate the fact that Darian's been holding quite a while. He's got 2 black boy bands he wants to throw in the mix, Barry. So let's get him in here. Darian, what's up?
What's going on, guys? Hey, I got 2 quick things to say real quick. If you could avoid 610 by the Galleria, you should.
Okay.
And my 2 black boy bands are Tony and B5.
B5?
B5, bro.
Who is B5?
They were signed by, like, Diddy. They was, like, this big black boy band that was supposed to blow up, and they kind of, like, dissipated after a while, but B5.
Now, I don't know about Tony. Wouldn't you say that was more R&B? But you're right. They may be pretty close
to a
boy
band. Tony might qualify now that he mentions it, and I was a fan of Tony.
B5. That's I'm gonna have to. Is that what you were playing, Nick? B5.
Yeah, this is it. And this very much look like a boy band.
Do they?
From the video, but they look like a modern.
Hey, appreciate the call, Darren. Somebody said immature.
Or I remember hearing.
I remember hearing
the name Immature. I can't place the song.
I'm trying to remember what song they had.
I saw something that said IMX or
what about
something
today?
Like that. IMX Immature. It just says IMX Boy Band. Immature was a R&B boy band managed by record producer Chris Stokes. Members included Marquise Batman Houston, Jerome Romeo Jones, and Kelton LDB Kessie, all natives of L.A. Okay. You got me on that.
What about Today?
Today?
Yeah.
That's a group?
Yeah.
Let me see. Today Band, because Today just comes up with the Today Show. Today is an American R&B group formed in 1988. Frederick Lee, Bubba Drakeford,
yeah,
Larry,
Bubba.
Larry Chief Singletary,
Bubba and Chief,
Wesley Wes Adams. That's whack.
Your nickname is short for your first name. Come on, man.
Barry Bear Laminack.
Barry Warner's already taken that from you.
Jolie Joe Blank. Get out of here. Larry Love McCain. That was the, oh gosh. Stop it. That's terrible.
Didn't today, who sang Kissing Game?
Kissing Game?
Yeah.
That was, wasn't that, what was that dude's name? Wasn't
it's
that
a group.
Dude?
It was a group.
It is High Five.
High Five. Yep. There you go. High Five's another one.
Just looked it up.
Yep. Oh, okay. Yep.
But the genre is listed as rock, which is kind of unique.
High Five is not rock, but High Five,
I mean, I'm
Kissing
just saying
Game's
what
a
I
good
see.
Song.
Yeah, Kissing Game is a good song. All right. Okay, you want to get this call in from Joe?
Sure.
Joe,
you want to get in here on this Jimbo Fisher, Kevin Sumlin talk? What's up?
Hey, man, that dude's crazy. Jimbo overall is a great coach, better than Sumlin by far. My only issue with the hire was I would have preferred a defensive-minded coach in the SEC. That was my only thing, but Sumlin couldn't hold Jimbo sacked. No way, no how. I mean, just like what you were saying with the 83-23, he had three less losses in more years than someone. Jimbo's going to be great. He's a good recruiter. I would have preferred a little bit more defensive mind, but other than that, Jimbo was a phenomenal hire. A little expensive, but he's a great hire for us. And I think that, like everybody's been saying, he's definitely going to be a game changer and making that next step to a top five program. And I'm excited about it. So thanks for hearing me, guys.
Hey, man, Joe. Good stuff.
Look, I would say this. To Joe's call, let's see who he brings as a defensive coordinator. Because as long as he gets the right defensive coordinator, it's like, man, boy, we talked about Mike D'Antoni and Jeff Bezdelic. Jimbo's an offensive guy. If he gets the right defensive coordinator, you're not going to have to worry about that. And the other thing that we talked about, everybody probably would have been happy if it would have been a little shorter contract. Because 10 years?
Man, that's what worries me the most.
That's a pretty big olive branch you're extending there.
Big chunk of change, that is for sure.
Billy Joel.
Is that what this is?
No question. You guys hammered me for being a Billy Joel fan, but I'm a huge Billy Joel fan.
Never liked it.
I don't like this track, though. I mean, he has good songs. I just don't like this one.
He's got a couple decent.
Here we go. All right, we might as well get to break then. We're going to take a break, come back with a whole lot more. Again, Jeff Paston, Major League Baseball writer, is going to join us at 2:30. So we'll talk a little hot stove and the winter meetings getting ready to get going. We'll get into all that. And then after that, we can continue to on with either you want to talk about the A&M situation, you want to talk about coaching changes, you want to talk about the Rockets, who are finally going to play a game tomorrow night in Utah.
Yay.
And they finally have to leave Hollywood and Los Angeles today after, what, like a week and a half? Well, hopefully that they'll get their heads on straight and win a game where they have trouble playing in Salt Lake City. That and a whole lot more. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Never want to work that hard.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
I will never deny the fact that I am a huge fan of Stevie Wonder, Elton John, Billy Joel. That's just the way it is. So, whether you like it or not. And Barry gives credit to Nick, which is much due. Great idea to post our lists so that we can catch all the heat that we need to on a cold day. Thank you.
And I think that that way they can see when I proclaim myself the winner that I'm right.
Yeah, and I think this one, I mean, with the list out, I think we can go ahead and dub myself. I mean, you're not supposed to dub yourself as a winner?
No.
But there's nothing catchy about Joel's hour, right, Barry?
Well, here's the problem. He's getting a lot of love on the text line.
Dang it.
I know.
Suck it, boys. Suck it.
Why did you... Why delete him.
Here's the other thing.
I'm just kidding. He's not.
Wins are... No, he's not. He's not kidding. And here's the other thing. Wins are wins. And regular season wins are important wins. And, Nick, I think you and I have, like, almost every win since we started this.
Oh, for the Way Back Wednesday?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been putting a whipping on Barry for sure.
This is along the same lines of you saying that you didn't agree to grow a beard out. It's just a false...
No.
It's a falsehood.
No,
and it's fabricated,
it is,
and you're a liar. And if I could say the S word, you'd be full of that, too.
You've said everything you wanted to say today. You should just let it fly.
No. Barry's a black Jewish... wait a minute. Barry is a black gay Jewish guy. You think he would know every black boy band. Okay. None of that is true. None of it.
The first part?
I think this goes
none of those classifications of me are true. Huh?
Nothing.
What?
I was going to say...
Oh, you wanted to say it and see?
No, okay. No, I'm good.
Did Herm Edwards end up getting the job at Arizona State?
Yes, he did.
Yes, and he didn't know who their mascot was.
Then someone sent him a jersey that was too small, and he didn't get it, and he was going crazy about that, too. That dude's really going to do well there.
Here's a text that I don't want to read, but I'm going to read because it's ridiculous, especially if they're talking about me personally. I wonder how many of these critiques of Kevin Sumlin are truly coach-related and not race-related. Just stop.
Yeah, stop that right there.
That's not the time. It's not. I mean, it has nothing to do with that.
That Kevin Sumlin didn't get the job because of race?
He got fired because of race.
No.
The critiques of him going 8-4 3 years in a row after starting 11-2, losing Johnny Manziel, and losing 4 games 3 years in a row. With a program with as many resources as the Aggies have, it would make sense, and logic would tell you that you shouldn't settle for 4 losses every year.
Yeah.
I don't care who the coach is.
And I think the balance is getting better. It could always be better in terms of, you know, race of coaches, but it's always good. Like Willie Taggart, for example, I read something really interesting. Each of the past 3 schools that he head coached at, he was the first African-American head coach at
Central
that particular
Florida,
school.
So Oregon, and now Florida State.
Well, I don't understand the argument. If the school was... hired him in the first place, then what's the argument? Why would you say that him being fired would have anything to do with his race? He got hired. It didn't have anything to do with it then. It had to do with the fact that he was a really good coach and he's not living up to expectations now. In this case, I don't agree with that argument. I just don't.
I'm with you.
Mike said, didn't the Today Show feature Matt, I'm locking the door, Lauer? Or he said, didn't today, because you said today was a group, right?
Right.
No, that's the wrong today. Matt,
speaking
I'm locking
that,
the door, Lauer. That's the wrong today, OU Mike.
The news today?
No.
Matt Lauer's father-in-law has come out and said...
Matt touched him.
That he has no intention of ever speaking to Matt again, that his daughter is filing for divorce.
Good.
And that she is OUT, which she should be, and that there was fact in all the rumor that he had been living in an apartment in the city and she had been living with the kids in the Hamptons.
Mm-mm-mm.
Oh, Maddie.
Oh, boy.
Oh,
that's
going to
cost him some money.
Mil.
Yeah, that's going to cost him some money for real.
Yep. All right, Denny wants to get in here on Throwback Songs. Denny, what's up?
Hey, fellas, how's it going?
Good, man. You?
All right, I got one for you. It's an all-black group from the mid to late 80s. Surface. Shower Me With Your Love.
That's a pretty good one.
Surface.
You don't know Shower Me With Your Love?
I might know
it's
once I heard it.
People used at weddings all the time in the 90s.
Surface. Look, I Google Surface and it comes up with a Microsoft tablet. Now I hate Google. What is this? Is this Surface, Nick? Is that it, Danny? Yeah. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
That's terrible, Danny.
Isn't it? I got a few good ones, so that's some guilty pleasure for you there, fella.
Appreciate the call, Danny.
Thanks, Danny. I
got to
throw one at you, too.
Okay.
Force MDs.
What?
Tender Love was like a boy band melody.
No, you hush your mouth.
I love Force MDs.
Yeah, that's
saying.
Not a guilty pleasure. Force MDs was a good group.
Yeah, okay.
They were an acceptable group. That wasn't
that's
one of those.
That's why I think Joel should lose, because I feel like he has acceptable groups on his list.
Yeah, you didn't get outside.
Billy Joel?
Prince? Who puts two Prince songs on there?
Because songs like Joel's, a lot of guys be like, nah, I'm not choosing that
it's
song.
Prince.
I like that song.
Dude, if you're going to rock with Prince, you understand.
I've never had that happen before.
Oh, my God.
Two on one again. Here we go.
Here we go.
He's going to cry.
Well, I'm not going to cry.
We need a box of tissue.
All. Well, rest assured, that's not happening.
We need a box of tissue in the studio. No, but I don't think you can put Prince because I don't. No one like.
Well, you know what? There was a time where you got made fun of if you liked Prince, right? Is it fair to say that?
I don't think so.
Songs they would like.
No?
They'd like "Let's Go Crazy" or the guitar riff songs or the
not like Vanilla Ice.
I think everyone knew that even though Prince was wearing boots and a purple cape, he was getting more ass than any other dude.
Well, that's what a lot of these guys were getting ass. But were you made fun of if you said you liked Prince?
Never.
I think so. I think there was a time. I agree with that.
Well, I don't know. I never did. How about Billy Joel?
I disagree with Billy. I don't think you get made fun of it for saying you like Billy Joel.
I just think Billy Joel's whack. I just don't. And to me, it would be like John Tesh.
Jesus, there's a hell of a comparison. Yeah, spot on there.
I mean, it's like.
Right, it's a perfect time to break here. We got Jeff Passan joining us next, MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports, a guy who has his finger on the pulse of Major League Baseball, even in the offseason as we get ready for the winter meetings. So we'll get him here next, talk a little Astros, talk a little baseball, and then we'll continue to take your calls and your responses as the usual suspect. If you want to tweet us, if you want to text us, if you want to call us, we're waiting for you. Right after the interview, Jeff Passan next. Don't go anywhere. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, coming out of the halftime break, ready for the second half of the big show as we welcome in Jeff Passan. He is a Major League Baseball columnist for Yahoo Sports. If you missed it because you're kind of all overdone on baseball after the Astros won the World Series and haven't been following it recently, we did talk about on the show that Joe Morgan came out with a letter trying to get real specific on who should get in and who should get out of the Hall of Fame, and Jeff, because of that letter, decided to give back his Hall of Fame vote in a bold move. So we got lots to talk about with Jeff. Without further ado, we welcome into the show. Jeff, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Always my pleasure, guys. How are you?
Really doing good. How are you doing? Are you getting ready for the winter meetings?
Yeah, not looking forward to it. I don't sleep a whole lot there, to be honest. I eat terribly. I drink too much. Like, it's just bad all the way around, and but hey, people love it. So if I can be in pain for 96 hours for everyone else's pleasure, then I suppose there are much harder sacrifices in life to make.
We could say the same thing about doing this show every day, but we appreciate you spending some time with us before you go into that hell that you're about to enter into.
Yeah, hey, Jeff, give the listeners a recap real quick. If they don't know what's going on with the whole Joe Morgan thing, give them a quick recap and what your response was. I want them to understand kind of what's going on in that regard first.
Well, I've been thinking for a long time, okay, what's my place in voting for the Hall of Fame? Like, is this something that reporters should be doing? And Joe Morgan's letter more or less convinced me that, at least for me, it's not the right thing to do, because what he did was essentially come out against steroid users, saying there's no place for steroid users in the Hall of Fame today, which I found hilarious considering there already are steroid users in the Hall of Fame. But Joe Morgan was launching a concerted attack on behalf of the Hall of Fame, for whom he is vice chairman, on Barry Bonds, on Roger Clemens, on Manny Ramirez, and on Alex Rodriguez. And he was doing this because Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens have been climbing precipitously in vote totals over the last 4 years. And so they saw a new wave of voters coming in, younger, more progressive, more open to considering performance-enhancing drug-using players. And I think this was them trying to draw the line in the sand. The problem is they did so in such an inelegant and hypocritical way, trying to paint the Hall of Fame as this halcyon place where fathers and sons can go and learn about all the great things in baseball. Yeah, the Hall of Fame is that. It's also a museum and a place that doesn't just put stuff out there about ugly things like steroid use, but has a responsibility to do so. And if the Hall of Fame is absconding from its responsibility to educate the baseball viewing public on the history of the game, I feel like that's not something I can be a part of or should put my name behind.
What I found interesting was in your response, you said at one point, because I think in the letter that Joe Morgan sent out, he called it the most sacred place in baseball. You said if by sacred place, the Hall means one in which racists, wife beaters, drunks, gamblers, and purveyors of manifold moral turpitude otherwise are celebrated. Well, Cooperstown is a shining beacon of divinity set upon a hill of hypocrisy. I don't think you could have put it any better. I mean, that's a beautiful sentence that kind of encapsulates the whole issue.
Well, thank you. The problem to me is when you start adjudicating things morally, you end up falling into this pit of despair. Because the reality is Cooperstown isn't this place that Joe Morgan and others want it to be. It does have warts. And you can talk about how some of those warts that I alluded to are off of the field, whereas this is on. Well, Joe Morgan's entire generation was hopped up on amphetamine. And steroids, it's not like steroids started being used in the 1990s. Now, there were guys back in the 70s who were using anabolic steroids, too. And so, you know, trying to say that the game was different back then, yeah, I get that. It was a little different. But the notion that it was clean and pious and something to which everything else should be held, that's the standard that the Hall of Fame, Joe Morgan, and some of his brethren are taking. And my problem with that is my problem with old, entitled, privileged men everywhere. They believe that what they were doing was the apex, that their generation is the best, that their work was the hardest, that their everything is everything. And they have trouble understanding what this latest generation brings to the Hall of Fame. It brings talent. It also brings controversy, and I get that. But I think that the people who run the Hall are intelligent enough to handle this in a very appropriate manner. And the fact that they're turning their back to that is really disappointing.
Well, one of the things we talked about ad nauseum here on the show, Jeff, is the fact that there's no criteria ever given out so that people are left guessing and wondering and making assumptions based on what they think the criteria should be in order to get in. And I just wondered your thoughts on that, on being more transparent, not only now where you're trying to release the votes and who everybody voted for, but also more transparency in terms of giving you criteria so that you have more of an accurate sense of how guys get in or are left out off of a ballot.
Yeah, I mean, here's my problem with one of my problems with the Hall is that the baseball writers for years have been asking for guidance on this. Now, I personally did not want guidance. If I have a vote, I don't need somebody to tell me how to feel or what to do. I see the character clause in there, and I completely ignore it because I think the idea that writers know who these guys are is just a fallacy. And as much as I'd love to say that I have a great personality profile on all the guys who I'm going to be voting for, that's just not true. And Kirby Puckett is a perfect example. You know, Kirby Puckett, during his playing days, was renowned as a great guy. And, you know, after he retired and after his death, some really gnarly stuff came out about him that I wonder if it would have changed the perception on him and if he would have been the first ballot Hall of Famer he was. So when the Hall of Fame is trying to guide and steer guys in or out, that's where I feel like they're going the wrong way. And when they're preventing the writers from revealing their ballots and not participating in that. You know, a writer can go and reveal his or her ballot anytime he or she wants, but we asked specifically for the Hall to do this for everyone involved, and they said no. And I just, you know, as journalists, we ask for transparency. Why they will not allow us to offer the same, and not just allow us, but force us to offer the same, I feel like was them, again, ignoring one of our wishes. And it's interesting when they then come back and ask us to do something for them.
I give you credit for giving back the ballot. I mean, that's it's a bold statement, and it's a ballsy move, and I commend you for it. But with that said, because there's a lot of interest here, obviously, in guys like Roger Clemens, in guys like Andy Pettit, and of course you can go all the way back and say guys like McGuire and Sosa, who literally changed the game of baseball and kind of brought the sport back to light. Will those guys ever see the light of day in the Hall?
After this, I doubt it. I would have said Clemens is getting in at some point, and I hope I'm wrong with that, because Roger Clemens is one of the best pitchers in baseball history, and he deserves to get in. And Barry Bonds is one of the best hitters in baseball history, and he deserves to get in. I'm not quite there on Sosa, honestly, because I feel like, you know, you look at his on-base percentage for the era, and he was not in many ways an elite player. He was a one-dimensional home run hitter. And if you look back at the number of home runs being hit, I try to compare statistics to their era. And with the proliferation of home runs at that point, what Sammy Sosa was doing was incredible, no doubt about it. But I don't think it in and of itself should carry him into the Hall of Fame, whereas there are other guys who performed during that era who I think are well-deserving. And the one thing I feel bad about is, you know, a guy like Edgar Martinez isn't going to get a vote from me this year. A guy like Bonds isn't. A guy like Clemens isn't. They're losing a vote because I'm not participating.
Looking at the 2018 ballot, I mean, the top five right now, based on percentage of ballots from last year, too. Trevor Hoffman in his third, it'll be his fourth year. I believe it's his fourth year, but he's got 74%. Vlad Guerrero at 71%. Edgar Martinez, 58%. Roger Clemens, 54%. And Barry Bonds, 53%. Are we going to see Trevor Hoffman in? And what are some other names that you think we might see go in this year from the 2018 ballot?
Yeah, I think Hoffman's going to be in. I think Vlad Guerrero is going to be in. I think Chipper Jones is going to be in. And I think Jim Thome is going to be in. And that's it's a pretty good class there.
And both of those will be first ballot, right? Chipper Jones and Jim Thome?
Yep.
Yeah, Chipper and Thome will be first ballot guys. Thome, you know, Thome's a 600 home run guy. Chipper, one of the best players of his generation, has been an MVP. Incredible switch hitter, played outfield, played third base. He was awesome, and I think I think they are both deserving first ballot guys. You know, intriguing first time guys like Omar Vizquel. I'm very curious to see where he lands, because he's got one of those candidacies that's based mainly on his glove, and yet you go and look at the advanced metrics, which I don't trust all that much, but they do tend to correlate with our perception historically about how good or not good a guy was defensively. And the advanced metrics really aren't big fans of Omar Vizquel on defense. And so at that point, you wonder just how much. I mean, you only need one nay for every three yays to practically derail a candidacy. And it's tough to get to that 75% threshold. You can ask Trevor Hoffman. I mean, I was an A for Trevor Hoffman, and I would have continued to be this year had I voted.
It's interesting because you mentioned Omar Vizquel, and I'm looking at guys like Jeff Kent on five times on the ballot, only 16%. Do you have to take into account the position that they played and the numbers that they put up relative to the position they played, or do you compare a second baseman to a right fielder or a first baseman or a third baseman that's mainly going to hit for power? Is that unfair to compare them that way?
No, I don't think it is. But I also, I'm not going to compare a second baseman to Bill Mazeroski. You know, like a guy who I don't feel like deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, frankly. I'm not going to suddenly put him as the lower bound of what is acceptable for a Hall of Famer. I'm still going to, if I were voting, I still would be keeping what I'd like to believe is a fairly high standard for a guy. And it was interesting. I was asked yesterday who would I vote in from the Veterans Committee that's going to be voting on guys next week at the winter meetings. And, you know, Marvin Miller, to me, is an absolute no-brainer. Just he's one of the most influential people in all of sports history, not just baseball. And the fact that he, as the leader of the leader and creator of the Major League Baseball Players Association, the group that gave sports free agency, the fact that he's not in at this point, it really is a shame. But a guy like Ted Simmons and a guy like Alan Trammell, I think those are two fascinating candidacies because they're both guys who are just on that lower end, and you could make an argument that they belong, and you can make an argument that they don't. And trying to look at those two relative to their positions, I think that's the fairest way to do it without taking into account some of those outliers who may have been either wrongly voted in or voted in by their friends.
Great stuff there. Jeff, before we let you go, obviously everybody here interested in what the Astros are going to do in the offseason. Everybody identifying bullpen as a need for them to improve. Your thoughts on the Astros and what they might do here leading up to the winter meetings?
I mean, they were in on Mike Minor. He ended up getting 3 years and $28 million and is going to start for the Texas Rangers. But the Astros certainly were in on that. They do need some bullpen help. It wouldn't shock me to see them go after a catcher. And I think they're sort of doing that under the radar at this point. What we know about the Astros, though, is they shop for value. And they don't want to hamstring themselves too much because Jose Altuve's contract is going to be coming up within the next couple of years. And Carlos Correa is really going to start getting paid here. And same with George Springer. And they need to have money socked away to extend at least one of those guys, preferably two. I don't think they're going to be able to afford all three, though. And that's going to be a really interesting choice to see who they go with and how much they can get them for.
Wow, there's some news to consider right there in itself. Jeff, we know you're busy. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining us for a segment. Best of luck, and take care of yourself during the winter meetings.
Just to clarify, they're not trading anyone this year. This is just like long-term, 2-3 years down the road. But as we know, thinking 2 or 3 years down the road can be very, very fruitful for an organization.
No question about it. Jeff Passan right there, MLB columnist for Yahoo Sports. Check him out on Twitter as well, at Jeff Passan. Jeff, again, thanks a lot for joining us.
Pleasure of mine, boys. Take it easy.
All right, there you go. Good talk on baseball.
Good get.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
We will continue to move on, but some good baseball talk.
See, this is the best song on his list right here.
Somebody said, I went to high school with Jeff. Good guy, a huge sports guru. Happy to hear him doing well. And another guy said, this guy sounds really smart. I wouldn't want getting a baseball debate with him.
He was dropping some multi-syllable words on
that quote that I read, yeah. I didn't even understand half the words. It just sounded good.
You like this song or you don't like this song?
I think this is the best song on your list in terms of songs that you should hate.
You should hate, but you don't.
Exactly.
What song is this?
Spice Girls, Say You'll Be There. He put I Swear, but I give it. It's close.
I've never heard this song.
Yes, you have.
Never heard this song.
I don't think I've heard this song.
You love this.
That's one of those video will dry you in a little bit, too.
I'm on the Spice Girls.
I would have put the Pussycat Dolls on there, but they're a little post-2000.
That is true.
But Nicole Scherzinger as lead singer, she can sing whatever she wanted, but that one with Snoop Dogg? Let me just tell you something. Wow. All right. We're going to continue to move on. Take a quick break. We're running a little late. We'll come back. Much more Usual Suspects, ESPN 975. Together you will see what our friendship is for.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on the Usual Suspects, almost done with hour number two. That would be My Way back Wednesday, and then Barry takes us home. Or no, Nick takes us home with hour number three. Barry had hour number one.
Barry already killed it in hour number one.
Eric Graham says, you killed it, but you dissected it with poison. It's okay.
Eric Graham says, does Casey and JoJo count as a boy band? No. And you hush your mouth for even implying
that.
Yeah,
that's a huge negative.
Yeah, we're all Jodeci fans, and that they should not be categorized with such venom.
No, y'all almost lost a listener classifying Force MDs as a guilty pleasure. See?
Okay, don't threaten me.
Black boy band, Two Life Crew. Oh, yeah. I was never a big Two Life Crew guy, though.
Really?
I couldn't get into it. The whole Miami bass movement... I never got into it. I mean, I liked the songs because, like, I could play DJ Magic Mike. Was it DJ Magic Mike? I think it was DJ Magic Mike was his name. He used to play nothing but, like, bass songs. It was like Feel the Bass was like a, I think that was DJ Magic Mike. I'm going to have to look it up, but I used to play those
pop,
kind
pop, of... The, oh, no, no.
No, but some of those songs, yeah, DJ Magic Mike.
Nick's face while I start quoting Two Live Crew songs.
Yeah, DJ Magic Mike, Feel the Bass, because, yeah. You don't remember this?
I do.
This, I used to have a box in my Oldsmobile Omega that was in the back seat that I took the wires that used to run to the 6x9s, and I would plug it into the box, but I was too broke to buy an amp, so it was just the Krayco head.
No amp?
Nope. It was just the wire straight from the radio, and then I would have to do the bass boost button on the front, crank the bass all the way up, the treble all the way up so I could hear some semblance of a cymbal or the words. But this, and then the only way that I would feel good about it is if the rear view mirror would rattle a little bit, or the side mirrors would shake a little bit. But that was it. But my one go-to song that made it sound good was Posse on Broadway. I could put that song in. I could put that song in, and I would feel like I had a badass system in my Omega.
Hit that up, Nick.
But that's it, though. I couldn't, like, my system sucked so bad because I was broke. I didn't have any money. I was living on Whataburger money. Like, you're not putting a badass system in. You know,
I've had a few ghetto rig systems, so I'm
me
not.
Me too. And the first time I got a real one, I got my whole car ripped up and stolen.
Really?
Yep.
I had I bought a 350Z. And I put a nice system in that. And that was, I mean, but I had oil money then. I didn't care. That was the only, that one was pretty impressive. I could make the windshield wipers hop off the glass on the front. That's how badass
the
system was.
Did you ever compete? Look at this, man. Look, I can.
No, I didn't compete.
Jump my wiper blades.
But I had, I went with the, I could jump my wiper blades. I had the square, the solo barrack. Kickers
solo
like the
barrack.
Nine,
I used to have solo yeah, barracks,
like
man.
The
those
nines
are,
that were like
great.
They sounded like 12s because they were squares and around. I'm sure all that was marketing. I'm sure none of that
was true.
Really mattered,
but I did like those solo barracks.
So, yeah, I had those in a fiberglass box in the back, and oh yeah, I loved it.
I just want to hear little posses on Broadway.
And then at the end, after I hated that Z because there was no room in it, and it was such a rough ride. So I was like,
all right.
That's
what I had. I had a Dodge Raider. Which was like a poor man's Jeep,
uh-huh.
Right? And I souped it all up, and I had the big bass tube in the back, and I had...
Oh, you had the bass tube? Like the Walmart bass tube?
No, the not a kicker, but a good... I finally got a good one.
Right.
And a real
good system. Because I did have a bass
like
tube.
And I had the removable face on the system.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like that.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, the one time... I just got it, and I don't think I even removed the face, because I was just running in somewhere, and they jammed a screwdriver through the middle of my door lock, and just popped it, and I was like... I came back, and I was like... No, it's all gone.
Yeah,
like that.
I had a pullout radio, and I don't remember what it was. I mean, I say it was Krayco. It was just a joke, but it wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. But I did have a pullout. I remember I used to work at Journeys. I remember every day I'd get to the mall, and pull that damn radio out, and walk through the parking lot with my radio in my hand.
Yeah,
that was big time back in the day.
Had like
day,
a lunch
boy.
Pail handle on it, right?
Yeah, it had a hole. Yeah. I always wanted a badass system, and I never had the money. And then I finally got the money, got that in the 350, and in about a year and a half, I was like, all right, I'm done. I just want a truck, no more rims, no more. And ever since then, I've just bought trucks, and I don't do rims or any of that stuff anymore.
Lamont brings up a good one, too. If you want to, he says best bass song with actual rapping was LL's Going Back to Cali. Great cut.
Yeah, Rock the Bells sounded good on my little piece of crap in the Omega. Yeah. Uh-oh. Is this your last one?
Yes.
What is this? Oh.
Prince and Apollonia, really. Yeah. Really just Prince.
Okay.
Take me with you. I'll sing this one in the car.
You will?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, you can sing it right now if you want.
No, I'm good. You already got me once today, but I didn't care.
Somebody said Blackstreet was a boy band. I don't know.
No. I don't think I would not classify that as a boy band.
Teddy Riley, no. Uh-huh. And not even Guy. Teddy Riley before all of his producing.
When Guy was more boy band, but it was still R&B.
But it still was R&B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody said, oh, well, we'll do it on the other side. I don't want to make us go on, but a couple more texts to read on the other
side. Two in the books, one to go. 1 hour left in the big show. Let's see what Siri has planned for hour number three. That and a whole lot more next on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.